Jackson. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Paul Schrader. Questions, but I'm not going to be selfish tonight, I see.
Thank you. My water.
I would never trip over your water, unless it was on purpose. But the first question I have for both you and Jeff, first thought when you read the script, do you remember your very first thought?
This is cool. I mean, to be honest with you, I would have never thought of doing a Holocaust movie, and a lot of them have been made, and the world certainly didn't need another one for me. And when I started reading it, and I was just absolutely captured by this metaphor of the man, boy, and dog. And it was fresh. And it's very difficult to get something fresh and original in any format, particularly in this Holocaust genre, which has been mined, you know, so extensively. So I just had a buzz. I had decided, even before I finished the script, that I wanted to do it. I said, look, you know, even if the ending is fucked up, I can rewrite it, because I'm going to do this.
Jeff, first thought.
Well, it was so smart and touching and riveting and scary, you know. But I thought, you know, beyond the disturbing, complicated, and contradictory things in the script, maybe there's something really here important for me and interesting in that beyond the historical events that we all know from which it imaginatively springs, it's about a guy, and I started to think this when I read it, it's about a guy who loses everything horribly and shockingly, but it's not unlike all of us who lose everything, maybe not the same dramatic ways, but everything finally goes, our relationships, the people we love, our health, our bodies, our abilities. And instead of, for this fella, it not being finally a diminishing thing, it opens up a doorway after a lot of struggling, whereby he can ask himself, who am I? Some people say is the most important question you can ask. And he thereby finds a way to disidentify from all the things that he thought he was and all the physical arrangements of the world and find an answer that's mysterious and maybe the only source of love and forgiveness and peace and connection to other people. So I thought, this is really worthwhile and maybe nourishing to work on for quite a period of time. That's what I thought.
Thank you. I can imagine, yes, go ahead.
I understand that this is based on another original work. And yeah. Can you tell them a little bit about the original source material and the development of this project?
Yeah, I'll say something you can pick up if you want to know. I mean, it's very important to understand that this is a work of fiction. It was written in 1968, the same literary time frame as novels like Catch-22 and Cuckoo's Nest. It is a work of fiction. There never was a hospital like this. There never was a commandant like this. And one of the reasons it's kind of fresh is because it violates two of the conditions of a Holocaust film. which is virtually everything that's ever been made about the Holocaust is one, based on fact, on history, this actually happened. And it's also very reverent, which is, you know, we should sort of lower our gaze when we talk about such a subject. Well, this is not factual, and it's certainly not reverent. And you know, therein lie the challenge and the excitement of adapting this novel, which you know, we worked on it after Noah wrote the script, but Noah and Ehud did the first sort of pass at it.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, I'll say a few words about the book. The novel was a classic in Israel where I grew up. It's something that was in the collective unconscious. Everybody had really known of it. And it was really one of the first novels to be kind of iconoclastic about the subject matter, to break, to shatter some very sacred taboos. And most severely, it dealt with the issue with irony and with humor, and that had been unheard of. And part of the greatness of Yoram Kanyuk is that he dealt with this in a, you know, he managed so well to bring across the insanity that's inherent in these situations. And I think you know, that was one of the major things that we've been trying to bring across in the film as well.
Yoram wrote this book, and at the time that he wrote this book, there was no any institute, any mental help, any psychology help for any Holocaust survivor. It's only started in the mid of 80s, all the awareness. There was an organization that was called AMCHA that was formed in Netherlands and started to help mentally to a Holocaust survivor. And Yoram saw it many years before then. For him, it was as he suffered in the independence war, he was a soldier, and other of us suffered as well. He wanted to create something that doesn't exist but exists.
Yes, sir.
This is a question for Jeff. I was just wondering how.
Hi, Evan. I just finished my first year at Neighborhood Playhouse. And I was just wondering how much of the Meisner technique came into play in your approach to this character.
Can I what in this approach? Can I what?
How much did the Meisner technique come into play?
Into play.
When you were creating the character?
Let's see. You know, I love Sanford Meisner. I was very lucky to study with him. What he taught was an approach to acting, and basically a two-year foundational program from which to then do all your graduate project work. You know, even though his training method is very specific, concrete, doable, especially in that first trademark learning of the improvisation and being present and collaborative with other people, which is always relevant, it's not esoteric. Finally, all good actors are trying to do, if they're good, what he's getting at. And even though his technique is very learnable and doable, it really relies finally on the instinct and talent of the practitioner and the student. So then finally it's about what everybody's trying to do, which is get into a made-up situation and just pretend good. So that's all I'm trying to learn how to do better. So it came into entirely into play. Like that. That's the short answer.
But I mean, on a serious note, can you talk about what you had to go through to prepare, and what it took for you to prepare for this?
Well, luckily I had a year before we started to do it. I got the job, then I had a year because things happened and da 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 da. But during that year, I'm nothing if not hardworking and conscientious, which is something else I got from Sanford Meisner and my father, the doctor, who was very work ethic oriented. So I figure from the time I got the job, I'm on the job. So I like to act every day anyway. And I did many things. You know, I worked on the show and went to Israel and worked on it with Paul. Went to Germany for a month and read through it with the German people and found the German and Yiddish things to pepper into it. Went to Poland and concentration camps, learned as much as I could about those events. Went to Israel for the first time, Yad Vashem. I talked to many survivors in Europe and Israel, and America, and with my students, actually, in my backyard, I have a guest house and I have an acting space, and they act as sparring partners, surrogates sometimes to the cast, and daily we would get together, they would play all the other parts, and I'd run through it like a play. I've learned it like a play, and then run through it and just work on something like that, and then learn how to play the violin. I took violin lessons and played every day, and did dog things, and many, many other things.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. All right, I'll take another question from the audience. Yes, in the red there?
How did you go about casting the role of David?
Can you repeat that, please?
He asked about the casting the role of David. We were shooting in Bucharest. The interior of the hospital was built on stage there. So we first looked in Bucharest because obviously it's a lot cheaper to use a local boy than fly somebody in with their parents for an extended period of time. And unfortunately, we found this boy, and he was just the right age. He hadn't hit puberty yet, so he didn't have fear, and he didn't have shame. And he was also smart as a dickens. He had just placed fourth in the Romania Academic Olympics.
Three.
And so his English was very good. He's very responsive to Jeff. I remember one day on the set, I said to somebody, you know, when this film comes out, somebody's going to give me credit for Tudor's performance. But the truth is, we just got lucky.
Wow, okay, one last question. And yes, ma'am, in the center there.
Something I always wondered, as you said, that the young boy was just before puberty, how do you explain to a child of that age, or even younger, of how to get these great performances? Do you explain to them, or do you just say, here are your lines, and I need you to cry?
Well, he doesn't have lines, except for at the very end. We did a lot of dog play, you know, and I got a local acting coach to spend a lot of time with him, and this acting coach had dogs, and they just spent a lot of time together doing dog stuff. But he was also very sharp. He had an extraordinary memory. We were working on one scene where we had seven stages. And I graphed out all the stages of the scene and seven sets of things he had to do. And I said, you want to write this down so you will have it, so you can work on it? And he said, no, I remember. And he did.
And Paul's a great director. He knows what to, besides being masterful and very prepared, he knows exactly what to tell you instinctively. I don't know how. You know, we came to that scene that in the cemetery. So when I finally get another horrible piece of information and find out I've missed my daughter and I'm there at her grave, you know, and we'd worked on that. We shot it toward the end, and it had been in the script many things, and we'd sort of turned it into his instinct was to make it simple and da-da-da-da. And when finally we came to the scene, and he said, you know, and we decided, he decided really that I think what you do is something very simple and have these flowers that you have and eat the flowers. So we managed to get edible flowers, da 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 da. So on the day I had these daisies, and the first couple of takes I ate the daisies. He says, okay, that was very good. It's an emotional scene. He says, but I think what's gonna make this work is on this next take, I was on that mound of dirt on that ground, that cemetery. He says, take a handful of dirt, put it in your mouth and eat it. Eat the dirt. I said, oh, I can see how that would be very, that would be good. Good, but it's, you don't want, it's dirt. I don't think that's, he said, no, eat the dirt. I said, aren't there bugs and stones and hearts? He said, look, Jeff, don't be, come here, look. And he took a mound of dirt, put it in his mouth and ate it. I said, Paul, okay, action, let's go, I'm ready, let's.
That always works with actors because you only have to do it once and they have to do it like 10 times.
I'm sorry?
I just want to think something.
Please.
Before you end. So I really would like to thank our DOP there, Sebastian Edgemead. And the executive producer, Ulrich Schleier from Germany. My partner, producer from Germany, Werner Wiesling, without him, it couldn't done. It was very interesting and crazy to do this kind of co-production. And last thing, two last things. I 20 years ago, my first feature film that I produced was present here in Toronto, and it was based on a book by Yoram Kenyuk, was called Himokim of Jerusalem. So it's now 20 years later, we're coming with this picture. I really would like to thank all of you and all of the organization here at the Toronto Film Festival to welcome us here. And of course, I would like to thank Paul, the maestro, and Jeff, that is only one Jeff, and of course. Yeah.
All of us here. Thank you very much for sharing with us. Thank you. Bye-bye.